Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Line drive, right field. We may have a play at the plate. Big hop. Here comes Downing. Here's the throw. It is. He knocked him off the plate. What a tag by Carter. A tremendous play by Carter. Oh, baby, what a play.
And what a throw by Dave Parker, who continues to show why some people consider him the greatest player in the game. One big hop. Watch it. Great play by Carter, as you said, Joe. A strong throw. Downing tries to slide inside, away from the ball. Carter blocks him off.
He knocked him right off the plate, never did let him in.
Greetings, sports fans. Welcome to Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Gino. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Kevin and Darren. Today's Wednesday, July 15th. This is show 180. Please catch us wherever you get your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, follow us on YouTube. Give us a look, join our pages, hit that like button, join our pages. We need people to join our pages. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got any comments, questions, send them to us. We'll get back to you. It's the doldrums of July. It is the sports potpourri roundtable. We're going around the world of sports. We're going to start it off talking about golf. We got the Open, as it is now known. Used to be the British Open. Had to get rid of the word British for some reason. But anyway, Royal Portrush, Northern Ireland. Winner claims a claret jug. Going in, we have two favorites right now. Scheffler is at plus 450 to win.
Well, Rory's Rory's the other one?
Rory's at plus 750. Listen, I can't stand the Rory stuff, so we'll get there. To finish in the top 10, the only two people that are in negative money right now are Scheffler at minus 225 and Rory at minus 140. Kev, talk to us about the Open.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we can have the same storyline as we've had for the last, what, year and a half, 2 years. Scheffler and Rory are the two favorites, and can anybody go catch them?
And I just think you mean Scheffler, because Rory's won one tournament in like 10 years.
He's won one major.
Okay, so I'm tired of the Rory talk, I have to tell you.
But Kev loves Rory.
Betting wise, he's always one of the two favorites.
Yep.
And really, should he be at this point? I don't even know if he should be.
Because of his natural ability, yeah, I think so. I know it's weird to say, but he's usually in contention, but sometimes he just falls apart. It's just, which actually disappointed Rory more for me this year. It's been his talk off the course. I just don't think he's come off looking good. Listen, it doesn't matter. He's Rory McIlroy. He can do whatever he wants, but he has not looked good. He has not represented the PGA well. He has not been the guy he had been earlier in his career. And it's a little disappointing for it's a sport that doesn't really flow well.
He won his Masters, and he's become almost like a cranky old man.
Yeah. He's like Kevin.
Yeah.
At what point does he become not the second favorite? At what point?
Someone else has to step up, G. Someone's got to go out there and actually be competitive and finish top five, two or three major tournaments out of four. You know what I mean? Someone's got to have that year like Fowler had a few years back when he finished second in like four and all four tournaments but didn't win any, where you say to yourself, oh, this guy's on the cusp, and he never won it. But, I mean, you know, guys like that, or Jordan Spieth, where he's competitive for a solid stretch. But right now there's nobody putting it together on a regular basis.
Okay. I'll give you three names who should be there who just haven't broken through. John Rahm. Mm-hmm. Who are still waiting to win. Did he win the
He's got one.
Yeah, I think he's got one.
And you feel like he's there, quite a few times, but he hasn't broken through to be consistently top five every tournament, you know, every major. And I think part of it, too, is he's not on the PGA Tour now, so you sort of lose track of him. Xander Schauffele, who's a defending Open champion, who's had a rough year, and Morikawa, you know, who you feel like, you know, you look at his numbers are fine. He just can't seem to put together the four terrific rounds in the major. He's got three of the four rounds that are really good, but that one round just knocks him out, where he is almost the backdoor top 10 for Morikawa.
He's also never won a major, Kev, with a crowd. His majors were during COVID. So I don't know if the crowd gets to him on Sunday or Saturday, or whatever day it is, but he's never had the success with a crowd.
Yep.
And I thought that's a standout. Sorry.
I thought the last golfer you were going to mention was Bryson. I think you're going to bring up Morikawa.
No, I think Bryson's another guy that if the course fits him, he will do fine. I think at the Open, I think link style hurts Bryson.
Listen,
if he's not driving the ball straight, if it's a distance course,
you're going to hit it 600-yard par fours and stuff. We have Bryson. But Bryson putting together four rounds of excellent short game, I don't trust it. I don't know about you, Kev.
No.
We like Bryson. I root for Bryson, but I don't think he can put together the short game for four rounds. And at the Open Championship, your short game is huge.
I wasn't talking about this course. Kev was talking about the other golfers that he thought could move up and have Rory move down. I mean, brought up Morikawa.
I don't think he's good enough to win all four championships ever.
No, but the golfers he brought up, one of them was Morikawa, who's got no majors, and Bryson's got two.
Morikawa's got majors.
He's got one.
He's got one, right? Or two.
He's got one.
He won at St. George's, and he won in 2020.
Yep.
Okay.
He should have two.
All right. Maybe you're right.
Bryson's going to win the same one. It's going to be the same type of course, in my opinion. Whenever it's a technical course, I don't trust him.
I trust Bryson at the PGA.
Yeah, of course.
Out of the four, I would take Bryson at the PGA.
My point was going more toward – I don't care about Bryson. My point was more towards I getting tired of seeing Rory as a second favorite and him not winning any of these.
I'm going to throw in a different guy. I'm going to throw in, and he hasn't won any yet. So I'm going to throw in Hovland as a guy that I think is good enough to be there. I mean, Olberg hasn't done anything in a major. Outside of one major, he hasn't done a thing. He never even usually doesn't even make the cut. But Hovland is right there, and he can get that fourth round together. I think he's the talent that could do it along with Schauffele. Those are the guys that stand out a little more to me. You know, it's enough. And listen, guys like Bryson. You know, I thought he was going to be. I want him to be in there because he makes it more fun. I thought Koepka for a couple of years was that guy, and Koepka has fallen off. Koepka was a top two guy for a couple of years. He was ahead of Rory in all of our opinions at a certain point in time for golf, but he's fallen off. Dustin Johnson at one point was a superior player, fallen off. Jordan Spieth, fallen off. Justin Thomas, fallen off. All these guys haven't stayed consistent. And that's unfortunately why we sit there and talk about the same two freaking guys, you know. Scheffler, who's the best in the world, and Rory, who's like that older guy that's not that old but can still play any course at any time and play it well.
I get it, you know, except before this win this year, you know, he's got no majors in nine prior years before that. I know what he did before that, but, you know. Yep. All right, so any guys you're looking at that can win this thing
here? Okay, just a real quick Royal Port Rush 2019. The winner was Shane Lowry. About a third of the participants will be back this year that played in 19. Before that, they hadn't had an Open Championship in Northern Ireland in 68 years, so it had been a really long time. They finally brought it back in 19. They're expecting rain every day. But because it's like a sand-based soil, it doesn't soften the ground, but it does make the course longer. So it's not going to soften the greens. It's not going to slow down the putting as much, according to them. But the course will be longer. It's not a headwind and you know, tailwind type of thing. You're not playing upwind and downwind. It's really all crosswind. So there's really never a moment where you feel safe about exactly where you're putting it. According to all these players, it's like you're just battling crosswinds all day long, for the most part, which makes it interesting. And wind is obviously at the Open Championship the most important factor.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, the other thing is there's not a lot of punishment for a miss hit off the tee. So it's not like what we just watched at the U.S. Open where you just get penalized for hitting a good shot. This is like, you know, you can get in trouble. You can get into the thicket. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, it's not designed to really hurt you. What it's designed to do is make you have to hit distances correct. You have to be on point. You can't be too long or too short. You just have to know your distance and judge the wind. So that's kind of really where we sit. You know, again, like we said, Lowry, the defending champ. Kev, who are the guys you're looking at this week?
Besides the big ones we've mentioned, I think the two I'm looking at, Russell Henley.
That was my guy in the Open.
he's such an accurate player. You need accuracy on this course. Mm-hmm. And knowing the distance, like you said. And I think, you know, he's not the biggest hitter, so maybe the rain hurts him a little bit because it plays a little bit longer. But you want a guy who's got to find fairways and put himself in position. Henley's going to be that guy. And I'll still go with one of the old guys here. I still like Justin Rose in this tournament. I think he's going to win one of these British Open. I think he's got an excellent chance of winning a British Open the next year or two.
Okay, I mean, Henley's at plus 400 to finish in the top 10. And Justin Rose is at plus 550.
And my guy is I'm still waiting for Tommy Fleetwood to win one of these.
Tommy Fleetwood is actually fifth favorite on the board at plus 210 to finish in the top 10. So,
yeah, he's right there. And one of these years, he's going to win one of these. So, okay. You know, outside of the favorites, you know, I think Shuffle's going to be there. I think Rory off his second at the Scottish last week puts him back on the right frame of mind, because if he didn't have that last week, he's been awful since the Masters.
Yeah, he has.
So I think last week helps. And Rahm is going to be so consistent. He's always there in the majors, it feels like.
Yeah, he finds a way to make a run better than most of them.
Yep.
He has a great Saturday like every year, and he shoots himself back up from plus 2 to minus 4, and you're like, oh, he's in it, you know.
I think Rahm, his front nine Sunday is going to determine if he's got a chance or not. He's got to put himself in position on Sunday in the front nine so that he can be there in the back nine. If he does, he's got a great chance of winning.
Okay.
What do you guys think?
You know what? I said it before. I think Hovland's going to have a shot here. I know he's been inconsistent. I think that Victor Hovland can put it together this week. I also like Justin Rose like you did. I'm looking to see if Matt Fitzpatrick can kind of get it going this week.
Yep.
I think Matt Fitzpatrick can have a really nice round. I'm expecting him to be a top 10 guy, G. And then if you're going to take a couple of long shots. Go ahead, G. I'm sorry.
Fitzpatrick's at plus 350, Hovland at plus 280 to finish in the top 10.
If I'm going to take a couple of long shots, it would be Jason Day and Patrick Reed would be the two guys I'm looking at.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Patrick Reed, because that's one of my bets I'm going to give you in a couple of minutes. Patrick Reed is plus 500. Jason Day is plus 500 also to finish in the top 10.
Those are going to be my long shots to try to get in there. I'm putting Shoffley in there. I'm not betting Scheffler. I'm not betting McIlroy. It doesn't mean anything to me for that. I'm here to either win some real money or I'm not betting at all. I'm not here to break even. So we'll see how it goes.
All right, so I'll give you a variety of bets here. So, top 10, two guy parlay. So Scheffler and Rahm plus 210. Spieth just to win outright is at plus 550, which I actually like. By the way, if I'm throwing something down on someone just to win, I like Spieth at plus 550.
It's only plus 550. That would be top ten.
No, nope, sure that's all top it is. 10? I'll take a look. Let me double check.
That seems too low. I think you can get plus like 5,000.
I'm sorry. Plus 5,500. I said 550. I apologize.
Plus 5,000. Yeah.
Plus. Sorry.
I'll throw a dollar down.
At plus 5,000, I'll throw a dollar down. Sure.
Yeah, I'll throw a 10 spot on it, see what happens.
Top 10, Reed and Rose, plus 3,800.
I love that.
Wow.
Okay. I also like Cam Smith finishing the top 10, plus 700. You mentioned Ricky Fowler, plus 800 to finish in the top 10. That's a kind of little throwaway bet you could do. And then there's a bet on DraftKings. Mm-hmm. It's called Top Royalty. It is a five-player top 20 finish bet.
That's not bad.
And it is all favorites. So it's Scheffler, Rory, Xander Schauffele, Justin Thomas, and Morikawa, plus 1837.
It's not bad.
Interesting. $10, $20. It's an interesting little bet there. I saw that come up. I was like, oh, that's not bad. Again, you're betting all these favorites to all play well to finish in the top 20, which in most cases doesn't happen, but it's not a bet. It's not a bad bet.
Yeah,
so the only other one I'll give you is I was on a little Spieth thing today. So Bryson and Spieth top 10 plus 1550, and that's one of the ones I'm going with this week. So
that's not bad.
Yeah, kind
of
like that.
Remember, this is also the championship where you got a lot of obscure winners.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
you had Ben Curtis.
The other one that popped up, and I'll just tell you, is the winner of last week's Scottish Open, Chris Goddard, plus 550 to finish in the top 10. I thought that was interesting. Came in out of nowhere to win the Scottish Open. He's plus 550. Got better odds finishing the top 10 than a lot of these other players like Cam Smith, Ricky Fowler.
You had Brian Harman win this, right?
Yeah.
You had Francesco Molinari win this. You've had Zach Johnson win this. Not that Zach isn't a bad player, but he's not, you know, whatever. Darren Clark, Stuart Sink, Todd Hamilton, Ben Curtis, Paul Lawrie. Remember when Vandeveld fell apart?
Yep.
And is just completely tanked. You know, it's been one of those tournaments where you'll get the bigger long shot in this tournament than any other. So it's just a guy that's hitting the ball straight that week that's handling the wind best. I mean, I know the courses are harder than they used to be, but they don't do a lot, the Royal Portrush, like they do to, like, the U.S. Open courses where they're trying to make you get everybody above par. So we'll see how it goes.
All right. Any other comments about the Open?
Nah, just hoping to get some good golf in, man.
All right. We are in Sports Potpourri Roundtable. Kev, give me a topic.
Well, we just had some championships this weekend at Wimbledon.
All right. Wimbledon.
Since we were just over in Northern Ireland there for the British Open, let's keep it there. So the women's side, in the semifinals, we had a big upset. Amanda Anisimova from the U.S. beat Sabalenka in three sets, 6-4, 4-6, 6-4. To set up a meet match against Iga Swiatek, who took care of Benchik, 6-2, 6-love. And if you woke up Saturday morning looking to play or watch some tennis there,
you didn't find it.
you were your bagel on your breakfast plate gave you the score.
Yeah,
Swiatek 6-love over Anisimova, 58 minutes.
That you know was how hard just, it is to win the semifinal and the final, Kev. In your last three sets and not lose a game, I mean that's unreal. By the way, because she beat Benchik by 6-love in the semi, and then she won the second set, and then she won 6-love. She won the last 18 games.
Yeah,
more than that, at least 19 games. I don't know how the first set went, but against Benchik, but Jesus,
as I mean, dominant 24 as 26. I mean, it's incredible. And then over on the men's side, in the semis. Sinner took out Djokovic in three sets, 6-3, 6-3, 6-4. You could tell Joker, he had a bit of a injury very late in his quarterfinal match. I mean, if you saw the replay, he did the splits, went down. I mean, he gave it what he could. I think at his age, he knew he gave it a shot. He does not serve in volley. He served in volley trying to just shorten points because he knew he couldn't last out there against – the young kid in center, but center took care of him. Fritz gave Alcaraz a pretty good battle in the other semifinal. Lost him four sets, 6-4, 5-7, 6-3, 7-6 in the last, 8-6 in the tiebreak. So Fritz was right there. You know, actually, he had a couple of set points there in the fourth set tiebreak. He was that close to getting to the fifth set. So really pushed Alcaraz. And then the finals came. Alcaraz took the first set 6-4, and then Sinner finished them off 6-4, 6-4, 6-4. So for Sinner, that's his fourth major. So you take a look now. You know, you look at the last 88 tournament, Grand Slam majors. That's 22 years. We know Djokovic, Nadal, Federer, 20 plus each. Alcaraz, 5. Sinner, 4. Murray and Wawrinka, 3. So that's 7. There are only 7 of the players have won one each.
I mean, in 22 years.
How heavy this has been.
And in right 22 now, years, huh? Wow.
22 years, you've had a total of 14. 7 of them have won once. The other 7 have won 81 out of 88.
Oh my God.
And, you know, we were lucky to see the big 3 with Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer. Right now, you've got a big 2 of Alcaraz, Sinner. There is a gap. Right now, the Grand Slams, Djokovic is still the 3rd. But then there's another big gap, I think, between Djokovic in 3rd, who's 38, 39 years old, down to, you know, the Medvedevs and the Fritzes and some of these other guys who, you know, Medvedev has won. U.S. Open seems to be the one tournament. You know, 5 different guys have won other than the big 7 that I mentioned. So it'll be interesting if somebody can step up in the U.S. Open this year to break the Alcaraz Sinner combo, or if they're just going to keep rolling. And, you know, can Tanner Fritz, off a really good run at the Wimbledon here, can he step up and be the guy? Can Shelton make a move? Can Tiafoe, you know, just thinking of some American guys, you know, can one of these Americans step up and become the first guy since Roddick in 03 as an American to win a major?
Yeah, one point I'll make is Grigor Dimitrov had Sinner on the ropes. I don't know. Again, it's not like Sinner can't come back from down 2 sets. So, yep. You know, this is not a sport where that doesn't happen. It certainly does. And Dimitrov has always hung around the top 10, like right there between 8, 9 to 13, 14. Don't know if he was, like, ready to make that little burst. But, yeah, Tommy Paul being another American that we'd look at. And it's just, you know, trying to see. There was a couple Canadians that were up and coming. Then all of a sudden they've seemed to fall off. And it's – no one's able to sustain this. And it's going to be the guys that just live the sport like Djokovic did, and like Federer did, and like Nadal did. And that's what we're going to find out, if one of these guys can compete with Sinner and Alcaraz, because those guys are right now head and shoulders above everybody else. And we have a rivalry, and they seem to be friendly, but we have a friendly rivalry brewing in the wonderful world of tennis.
Yep.
While on the female side, we have, what do we have, like 4 or 5 Americans in the top, like, 10? It's pretty cool.
You've got
in the top 8, I think.
You've got Coco Gauff, you've got Madison Keys, you've got, you know, Nisimova should move up after this performance, despite the final. I mean, there are a couple of females, women that are up there.
I think they're 4 of the top 8, even though Swiatek looked like she was playing chess against everybody else playing checkers in this tournament.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We'll move on. I'll go next. I want you both to know that I have sent my personal resume to Woody Johnson, because he's handing out $100 million contracts, so I figure I'm going to try to get my hands on some of this money. Garrett Wilson, 4 years, $130 million. Sauce Gardner, 4 years, $120 million. Guys, talk to me about these contracts. These seem like they're absurd, but talk to me.
This is the going rate for a 2-time All-Pro at cornerback and an elite number one wide receiver. Okay, I mean, listen, I understand your thought process, G. I get what you're saying. But I actually disagree with you on this. I think these are two guys they had to sign. I think that Sauce Gardner, again, 2-time in his first 3 years, twice a 2-time All Pro. First team All Pro is pretty impressive. He did not have a great year last year, so We are expecting a bounce back, but we'll see. Garrett Wilson, you know, for the most part, hasn't anyone thrown him the ball, and he's been really, really effective. So I'm ecstatic that they re-signed both of these guys. The real question mark for me now is, are they going to do the same thing with Vera Tucker? Are they going to extend him? Because he's become he started off like elite. Now he's become very good. We're going to see if they extend him. But I think that these were moves that the Jets had to make. I don't think there was any way that you could let either one of these guys walk. Kev, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think Sauce got the going rate for a top cornerback. I think the way
he got the top rate.
Yeah, he passed Stingley.
He is the top rate.
Well, he set the market. It'll be passed over the next year or two. But I think this year having Aaron Glenn, an all-pro cornerback in his career, as his head coach, I think can only help, you know, regain what he was the first 2 years. And I think they're going to play probably a little bit more press coverage, I could imagine. I think they're going to, you know, last year I think they played a little bit more zone type, which I don't think plays to Sauce's strength. I think he's much better in press coverage. And I think Sauce is going to have a big year. And I think you're paying for that. Garrett Wilson, like you said, Darren, he's had in 3 years, what's he had? About 12, 13 different quarterbacks, it feels like, throwing the ball. And except for Aaron Rodgers, there's nobody on that list that you would say, ooh, look at that guy throwing the ball. And to put up the numbers he has without any offensive support, I think says a lot for him. He wants to be a Jet, and he got paid to be a Jet. And he's here till, you know, 2030 at least.
They both are.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Neither one of these contracts start until the rookie contract ends. So both players will be here till 2030. At that point, the way it's going to go, Gino, there's going to be a wide receivers that pass Wilson. There's going to be cornerbacks that eventually pass Sauce. They're not going to be the highest paid players once we start in 2026. But right now it looks like it because the contract doesn't take off until then. Well, 27, actually.
I think you had to establish something to say these are Jets guys. And how many guys have we seen drafted in the first round that or second round that have not had their second contract? I mean, so few and far between that. It's nice to see two guys get the second contract with the Jets and be here for a number of years.
I mean, I don't think we'll see. I think that these guarantee that we won't see Breece re-upped just because right. – you know, they're going to sit there and go Braylon and figure out what they have as backup running backs. And we'll probably enjoy Breece for one more year, and that's probably it. The Vera Tucker thing's a question mark. He's been hurt twice. So, he has to stay healthy. But when he plays, he's good. I mean, but that's the next guy that we got to see if they're going to sign. That's really where it comes down to. And then it comes down to Jermaine Johnson a year after that. And then, we figure out what goes on. But, yeah, Gino, it's a lot of money. I get it. But right now, I'd rather have Garrett Wilson happy than your guy McLaurin crying over in Washington, making up a big stink. So I'm going to take my guy smiling. I'm going to take my guy smiling to page.
I completely agree. All right, Darren, where are we going next?
You know what? Since I really have nothing else, I think we should probably go to baseball. Why not? Actually, you know what? No, we'll save baseball for last. Couple quick points, and then we'll go to baseball. So start with a hockey point. Quick stat. Connor Bedard, first two seasons, right? 150 games, 128 points. Not bad. He's a minus 80.
Wow.
His plus minus is minus 80.
Wow.
He's got 100, almost a point a game, a little less. He's minus 80. It's unbelievable to me. I saw that stat. I was like, oh, my God. Minus 80 sounds
what,
like
was that. What was that there? Minus 8?
Minus 80. Not minus
18?
18-0.
Yeah, but I
– Gino, he's supposed to be an elite player. You don't come in at minus 80. Sorry. You're electric.
Okay,
the only guy on the team, but superstars aren't minus 80s.
Here is my problem, Darren.
It's a bad team.
It's a bad team. I hate the plus-minus factor because you could be a decent player – and be on a bad team, and you're always going to be minus for every game.
I'm not talking about a decent player. I'm talking about a revolutionary first pick overall guy that's supposed to transcend the team.
He's come also on, a defenseman,
we're not
Darren.
Talking, we're not, no,
he's
listen.
Also a defenseman.
No, he's not. What sport are you watching?
You said Connor Bedard.
Yeah. He's a forward. It's not Brian Berard. It's Connor Bedard.
No, I know.
He's a forward, G.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay. He's a center. I got it.
The thing is that when you're an elite player, you're expected to improve the players around you, and he hasn't done that yet. I know he's young, but minus 80 is a little extreme. If you would have told me he was minus 40 over 2 years, I wouldn't have thought anything of it. But minus 80 to me is extreme. And it's we're talking about two seasons. We're not talking about 30, you know, or five or whatever. We're talking about two. I know it's a bad team, but a bad team with a superstar player on it should be able to battle his own, and the depth should be what brings them down, not the first line.
I tend to disagree with you on that point. Well, you're a bad team.
You tend to be wrong. It's all right. Don't worry about it. I'm joking.
But when you're averaging a point a game and you're minus 80,
Chicago's goal differential last year was minus 70. So they were one of the worst teams in the league.
All right, so if they're minus 70, and let's cut it in half. If he was minus 40 last year, that means they were only other minus 30 with the other lines.
His line has to be better.
Well, he's not the only one that affects that number, Kev.
No, but his line has to be better. He's not back checking. He's not leading this team. They're not playing around him. It makes you doubt if he will be a superstar. Other players that come out elite as the first pick of a draft have a tendency to be really, really special. This kid is not it.
I tend to disagree with you, Darren. Disagree with you. You put him on Dallas.
He's perfectly good. Okay.
You put him on the Dallas Stars next year, and he's plus 40. Why? Because Dallas is a good team. That's why. That's why I hate plus minus in hockey. I hate it.
So I get your point that he's on a bad team.
You got bad goalies and bad defensemen that are giving up goals all the time. That's why they won 20 games, 25 games last year.
But Gino,
he can't do everything, Darren.
But he's not doing anything. If you're on the ice and you're minus 80, when you're on the ice, if you're minus 80, you're not back checking.
It's complete bullshit. That's such a bullshit line.
How is that a bullshit line?
Darren, suppose you got horrible goalies.
Okay. Suppose I have horrible goalies.
So I'm back checking and they're still giving up goals. I'm back checking and the defensemen still aren't covering everybody. We can't win a damn game.
You know, you're acting like there aren't three other lines that are getting victimized. His line is getting victimized. If you're the first pick of the draft, you have to be better than that. You can tell me all you want. He's not a supreme player.
I disagree.
Okay. So you disagree. The supreme player in minus 80 is more than realistic and good.
You were taking a stupid stat, and that's what you're deciding he's a good or bad player on.
I didn't say he's a bad player. I said
that's what you're implying. He's minus 80. You're implying he's a bad player. Are you implying that or not? Am I not understanding you? Are you implying he's a bad player or no?
He's the first pick of a draft, and he's minus 80.
Are you implying he's a good player or a bad player?
What I'm saying, he's not a superstar.
So he's minus 80 and he's not a superstar. That's what you're saying.
I'm sorry. Did I?
I just want to understand. I want to understand what you're saying.
Four times in a row. What do you want me to say?
So he's a good player then.
He's a solid player, but he's minus 80. He's not leading his teammates around him.
How can he lead his teammates around him when they're winning 25 games a year, Darren?
So let me.
It's a bad team.
I can't talk for a second. Then I'm going to tell you.
Here, Connor Bedard last year, 82 games. 67 points as a center, minus 36 last year. Ryan Donato, 80 games played. He's also a centerman for the Blackhawks. 31 goals, 62 points. So very similar offensive numbers. He was minus 15 as opposed to minus 36.
What was his ice time? Bedard probably on the ice twice as much as him.
16-18, Bedard was 20. It was four more minutes.
Excuse me?
Four more minutes for Bedard.
Per game. So he's on the ice, 80 games? Another, 300 minutes?
Well, Donato's probably playing against similar players to him, and that at least is getting close to his own.
You mean he's playing against bad players?
He's playing against third liners, probably.
Bad players.
Against first liners.
As Gino wants to tell us right here, because it's so important to note, is that Berard is the only guy on the ice when the goaltender decides not to play well. Because Gino has made that perfectly clear multiple times. And it's the only guy on the ice when the defensemen really aren't stepping up to par. Everybody else is bullshit. Just when Berard's on the ice, we've noticed a real drop-off because Gino has just claimed that the goaltending doesn't play well for him, but they do play
well. No, the goaltending doesn't play well for anybody, Darren. For anybody.
He
doesn't play well for anybody. That's why everybody's horrible on the team. They won 25 games last year.
Do
you think their goal differential is going to be good? Do you think he's going to be plus 40?
How did McDavid do plus minus rookie year?
The team is 25, 46, and 11, and you think he's going to be plus 40, Darren? How? How is that even possible?
I said minus 40 would have been acceptable. Minus 80 wasn't.
Well, he was minus 36 last year. Kev just said.
40 over 2 years.
Okay, so that's even worse. Now we're getting into 50 wins. We're getting into 50 wins and 90 losses. Now we're getting worse.
68 games minus 44. Tie for the worst on the team.
Who's that?
Bedard. 68 minus 44. Tie for worst on the team.
Gino, what stat do you want to see that tells you this guy's playing much better than I'm watching?
What I don't want you to do is take a plus minus on a team that is one of the worst teams in hockey over 2 years and tell me that's a good factor to evaluate whether he's a good player or not.
When you're on
that's
the
what
ice
I don't want you to do.
More than you do, it means you're not playing very well.
Look at the Dallas Stars roster. Give me somebody that's a minus 30 and tell me they're playing badly. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. But when you take a team that won 25 games last year, the whole team is bad, Darren. How could his plus minus be good?
He led the league and the team and maybe the league in plus minus. How do you sit there and defend him?
The goal differential was minus 70. They were second worst last year. How could it possibly be good?
He was minus 42 out of minus 70?
No. Chicago was minus 70 in goal differential last year. Understood. How could they so how could he possibly be good, Darren? How could his plus minus possibly be good?
All I'm saying is if you're a superstar, which I don't understand how you can't grasp this, you shouldn't be the worst plus minus on your team.
When you're a last place team, yes, it can.
Yes,
and I disagree with you.
He should be the worst plus minus on your team when he's your best player.
I didn't say he should be.
You just did.
No, I didn't say he should be, but he could be. He could be. When your team is horrible, when everybody's horrible, Darren.
So it doesn't matter what he does.
So pick somebody on Dallas, show me that they're minus 35, and let me tell you that they're good or bad.
No, listen.
But picking somebody on the worst team in the league does nothing for me.
What you're missing, which is clearly a lot in this, is that we're not talking about the fact that he is going to be a plus player. He was never going to be a plus player, but he should have been somewhere around minus 20 if he's the star he's supposed to be, not a minus 40.
So on a horrible team, he's going to be minus 20.
He should be.
Then he's not going to be on the ice half the time.
He's not going to be on the ice half the time anyway. He's averaging a third of the ice, not a half the ice, Gino. He's averaging 20 minutes, not 30. So let's not exaggerate it.
Okay, fine. But you're talking – you want somebody who plays 20 minutes a game to be minus 20 on a team that is horrible. It's not going to happen, Darren.
So let me just –
it's not going to happen.
Kevin's got a stat for you.
So
because you don't understand.
Oh, I understand plenty. You're just not grasping a concept for the first time in a long time.
No, you just don't get it. Go ahead.
A worse team than Chicago is San Jose.
Yep.
Okay.
Macklin Celebrini, 19 years old.
Best player.
So that puts him very much in line with Bedard, right?
Yep.
Bedard's 20, 21.
Yep.
25 goals last year, 38 assists, 63 points in 70 games. He was minus 31. Bedard was minus 38. We don't hear
36, but okay,
as much as we hear Bedard. True?
I don't know. I don't know if it's true or not, but I hate looking at plus minus for hockey players on teams that are horrible, that are minus 50 or more goals negative.
I think so Darren's point is that Bedard, you've heard about. Bedard is always mentioned as one of the top young players. Celebrini, you know, may not be to that level yet, but Celebrini put up the same goals, assists for a worse team and has a better plus minus.
In one year.
Well, they've only played one or two years.
They've only played 1 year together. I mean, you know.
Okay. I'm just saying, you're looking at 1 year. I get you, but, you know, you're looking at 1 year.
Listen, when Bedard was drafted, is my only point, he was supposed to be an elite player. Am I wrong? Did I miss something?
He was supposed to help turn around the Chicago franchise.
He was supposed to be this guy that was supposed to be special. He was supposed to be the next coming. He was supposed to be the next great player. And so far, he has not made his teammates better. My only point. It's not a shot at Connor Bedard, but he's not leading this team at this point. And that's something that has to turn around. It's that simple, G. I don't think he should be plus 20. I don't think he should be anywhere near that. But I don't think he should be the worst plus minus on the fucking team.
Okay, well, when you have a team that's horrible.
We agree to disagree.
When you have a team that's horrible, I think it's going to be very difficult for you to find guys that are plus in plus minus differential that actually mean something with a good player. I just don't see it. They're a horrible team. He's playing 20 minutes a night, and there's no way that they can't be. There's no way he could be plus 20 on a team like that. They're giving up way too many goals. They're giving up way too many goals.
I get it, but you seem to think that I think he's supposed to be a plus, and I've never said he's supposed to be a plus.
They gave up 296 goals last year, Darren, as a team. I think 296 goals.
Minus 80 just is so much.
Kev, they gave up 296 goals, Kev.
But it wasn't only with him on the ice.
I understand, but when you give up 296 goals, there's no way you can have a good differential. They're giving up almost 3.5 goals a game. There's no way you could be plus. There's no way you could have anything good about that. I'm sorry. He's got nobody around him to make him better. There's nobody there for him to make better. The whole team is horrible.
It's not very good. I'm not great. I'm not disagreeing with you.
Okay. Well,
all I'm trying to say is that, you know, you have guys like Burakovsky who played 79 games, played 16 minutes a game. His plus minus was minus 3. I'm just saying the team did not perform well when he was on the ice. You could say it's the other four guys, the other five guys all day long.
But show me
79 games and he played nearly 16 minutes a game. It wasn't like he didn't play. It's like this guy stands out as somebody that really just didn't do well at all.
Okay. I hate plus minus. I think it's a horrible stat to bring up with a good player on a horrible team. It's a bad stat to bring up. I'm sorry.
Mikhaev played 80 games. He averaged, you know, a little under 16 minutes a game, and he finished plus 4. Now he played 80 games.
But, Darren, you have no idea who he's playing against. You have no idea who he's playing. But you're assuming you have to make the assumption.
But I'm not allowed to, and you
have to. You have to make the assumption that Bedard is playing against the better players in the NHL. You have to make that assumption, yes?
When you're at home, no. When at home and you get the last line change, absolutely not. That's half your games.
Not when you have a bad team, Darren. They don't have any good players.
So you're telling me that they don't try to make line adjustments?
Darren, do you think in the middle, at the end of these games that Bedard is not on the ice against the better players in the NHL?
I don't want
to. You really think that?
Do you know?
I don't know.
So why you
have to make that assumption?
No, you don't know.
You don't know either. You're giving a stupid stat. You're giving me a stupid stat that he's minus 80 over 2 years on a team that's horrendous, that's won 46 games in 2 years, and you want me to think that that's a great stat to bring up? I don't. I don't think it's a good stat. I think it's a horrible stat. It's a player that's playing on a horrible team. He's playing on a horrible team. The team gives up a ton of goals, and you want them to somehow be minus 20. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Well, all these guys found a way.
Yeah, they're not good players, Darren.
But, you know, but if you're a third line center,
how many Black Hawk
games
you watched?
Against good play.
You tell me how many Black Hawk games you watched. Tell me how many period of Black Hawk games you watched.
Three.
You watched them all. You watched them
three
all
games.
The way through. Okay.
Three games.
Tell me about those three games, G.
I can tell you they're too far away from my head.
I don't even know the three games.
Nope.
Now you're making stuff up.
So Mikheyev, who's got a plus four, look at his numbers. What is he? Right wing, 20 goals. What's he got to be, a third liner?
Probably. Playing 60 minutes a night?
Playing against other third line players on other teams, right?
Other guys who can't score.
On the road.
Other guys who can't score.
But somehow he's a plus four against a team that can't stop a puck, apparently.
Great. Other teams, other players that also can't score. He's playing on the third line against other third liners.
And Bedard's playing against the best players, and he's not the best player on the ice then.
I agree. He's not. He's on a horrible team. How could he possibly be the best player on the ice?
But Mikheyev can hold his own against like players on other teams.
Yeah, against horrible players, Kev.
They're not horrible players.
Any of those guys play for the Dallas Stars? Because Gino keeps like talking about the Dallas Stars. He played against the Dallas Stars a few times a year, G.
Well, because the Dallas Stars consistently win 50 games a year, Darren.
I'm sure their third line is better.
They're going up against their monstrous third line where everybody should be plus 40. Gino, what other stat do you want me to use about how you do against the ice?
Anything. You can use any stat for me. Bring up any stat. Bring up any stat you want about Bedard, except plus minus, and tell me he's not a good player. That's fine. I have no qualms about it. I don't care about Connor Bedard.
Tell me the stat that we use for hockey, though. Give me the stat I should use.
Any stat, except plus minus. Except plus minus.
The stat that we should use.
Any stat you like. Goals, assists.
Because you don't like plus
power play goals, shorthanded goals, overtime goals. Give me anything you want. Just don't give me plus minus on a horrible team.
Okay, so plus minus shouldn't be there. It should be removed as a stat according to Gino. Okay.
Yeah, it should. It should. I feel like it has almost no value. That's my opinion, and I stick with it.
Okay. I just think that you're missing my point, but that's all right.
I'm not missing your point. I get your point. I just disagree with your point.
No, I just don't. I don't see how.
No, I get it. Right. I get it. I just disagree with it. Right. I disagree with it.
All right. I think you're mistaken.
You could think anything you want. It's still my opinion, and I disagree with you.
Kev, bring us to something else.
Where are we going?
Oh, I got one last thing. Canadian golf fight. So there's a bunch of drunk guys playing slow on a Canadian golf course. And, you know, the other group kind of goes up on them and tells them they better start playing. You're acting like jackasses, this, that, and the other thing. So the most drunk guy starts getting loud. And, you know, he starts yelling back at the guy. And then he charges him. And the guy throws him into a pond and then throws him around and punches him while doing sound effects while every punch. It's like, boom, boom. He's saying the boom as he's hitting him. And it turns out the guy that was pummeling the other guy was none other than former NHL enforcer Nick Tarnaski. You know, it was just kind of one of those things where don't fight with a hockey goon. What are you, stupid? And then, you know, what it comes down to is the guy apologized afterwards saying, I played 36 and I was pretty drunk and I shouldn't have done what I did. So that's it. A little golf on the course. And Bedard still sucks. Anyway, go ahead, Jay.
All right, so we'll go to baseball. We're at the All-Star break. Yankees at 53-43, two games back. Mets at 55-42, half game back. All-Star game going on as we speak in the fifth inning. National League up 2-0. Where do you guys want to go?
I don't really know much to say. I mean, you know, listen, the American League only has seven teams over 500 right now. The Red Sox have gone on a major run. Making themselves competitive in there. Right now they're in the playoff hunt with the Yankees and the Mariners are the three teams that are in with the Rays trailing. Everybody else is below 500. The best team in baseball is the Tigers, not that they showed it here in the All-Star game. They didn't really do much. Astros and Blue Jays, and the Astros got off to a little bit of a sluggish start, but they've turned it around. The Blue Jays have been great. They lead their divisions. In the National League side, Kev, it's the Dodgers by a half game over the Cubs. Phillies by half game over the Mets for the third spot. And then the Brewers have actually been kind of on fire lately with the Padres with a half game lead over the Giants. So Cardinals and Reds also over 500 in the hunt. So it's really coming down to, will the Yankees and Mets hold on to their playoff positions?
Yeah, Milwaukee, you know, winning seven in a row going into the All-Star break, they didn't want to see this happen. Like I said, they've gotten within a game of the Cubbies. National League, you're looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, realistically 7 for 6. St. Louis and Cincy probably closest on the outside. Mets right now have two ways in, either taking care of the East because you're only a half game behind the Phillies or hanging on to the wild card. I think it's one game each, but you look at the weekend against the Royals. Senga threw 4 good innings coming back on Friday night. Manaea on Sunday looked real sharp, went 3 and change, gave up the run in the 9th inning. But, you know, coming out of the break, you have a chance to reset. I think, you know, having for the first time all year all 5 of the projected starters healthy gives the Mets a leg up to try to get off to a good start.
For the first 8 games before 3 people go down.
Well, hopefully they're through their injuries. I mean, come on. The Mets have had, you know, them and the Dodgers have had more pitchers injured than I think anybody in the major leagues.
Yankees got to be up there at this point.
Yankees are probably 3rd. And, you know, you hope that the injury bug's behind them. I think, you know, you're hoping that Raley can come up and give them that lefty guy out of the bullpen. They're one more 8th inning guy short, like we mentioned last week, and I think that they need one more bat, preferably in center field, because right now Taylor, Darren, I re-listened last week, and you were so spot on. I think he had 2 hits the other day. You were thrilled.
Yeah, you get excited when they go 1 for 4, right? Yeah.
I mean, 1 for 4, you're thrilled.
It's like watching Volpe the other way.
Maybe this demotion was Alvarez's wake-up call. I mean, he's got 8 home runs in 18 games in the minor leagues. Maybe he's refound it. Maybe it was the wake-up call he needed. Because, you know, unfortunately, as great as Torrens and Senga are behind the plate, I mean, they shut down the running game of the opposition. I mean, Torrens is probably up near 40% caught stealing, which leads the league. Again, it's a black hole because Torrens is sitting 2-0 and Sanger's below 2-0. But you still need that one more bat. I don't know where it is. We talked to the guys last week. We'll see what they do. But coming out of the All-Star break, like I said, the big thing's going to be the pitching. And the fact that they have all 5 starters coming out of the break is going to be huge.
The thing about this team is the biggest frustration you have is, can anybody give you 6 besides Peterson?
Besides Peterson, yep.
Because they're going to they have to make the move, and the move has to be middle relief. And it has to be guys to bridge you to Diaz, who's been outstanding.
Yep.
It's just you got to get to him. And the problem is right now, can Senga go more than 5? Are they going to allow Manaea to stretch out to 5? They already told you that Holmes isn't going to go more than 5.
Yep.
And listen, Holmes is a number 5 this year. Sounds outstanding, right, when you look at it. It's just, you know, you have to get the bridge guys. Reed Garrett seems like the last couple of outings he's been better.
He seems to have gotten back to where he was early in the year. Yep.
After June has passed, but they still need at least one more arm back there to bridge you, in my opinion.
Yep, I agree with you.
I feel like the Yankees are in a similar boat, but I think the Mets actually needed a little bit more, in my opinion.
I want to see the Yankees bring in a 3rd baseman, though.
Yeah, well, that's where we have to go.
The interesting name out there that, you know, you really take a look and you wonder why he was not on the team from the beginning of the year, David Robertson. Guy pitched with a 3 ERA last year. He's a free agent. He's throwing for teams this weekend. That's a no cost, no prospect, no trade ad that you send him down to the minor leagues for 3 weeks, get him ramped up. You know, that's another good arm out there.
Yeah, I wonder how much he's really got, you know what I mean, left in the tank when no one's picked him up all year. He's been, you know what I mean?
But he's been good the last couple of years. Good to real good. And, you know, I tell you, I'd rather take a chance with him than trading a bunch of young players for another middle reliever. I'll take Robertson over Dickey Lovelady.
Well,
no, you wouldn't.
I mean,
Rico Garcia. Oh wait. Rico Garcia just went to the Yankees, didn't he? With his six ERA in his career. I mean, you know, just one bad guy after the other.
I wouldn't count on David Robertson, Kev. I mean, you know,
I'd take a chance on him.
Well, you say that, but you haven't seen him throw. I mean, he's 40 years old. He's played in the majors for what, 18 years? I mean, I would think with the lack of bullpen depth everywhere across baseball, if he had anything in the tank, somebody would have picked him up by now. I mean, but I get your point. I get your point.
Yep.
Listen, he's someone to look at. I mean, the Yankees apparently are looking at him as well.
Yeah. Oh.
Like I think said, that's more of the Yankees right now have a blaring hole at third. So where do you want to go?
DJ LeMahieu.
I think it's going to be Ryan McMahon. I'm not going to love it, but I think it's going to wind up being like Ryan McMahon.
I would love it to be, you know, I don't know. Arenado, I guess, would be the guy I would want, but
McMahon so would that's be my who I want also, but
only because he again, you know, it's that old school thing. He puts the ball in play and makes things happen. The other question, Gino, is it time to let Lombard come up at any point this year to see if he can supplant Volpe or no?
Sure.
When?
At any point you want.
No, I'm just saying, do you want to do it?
Yeah, right at any point. I mean,
late August? I mean, when do we want to do it?
If it was me, I'd want to do it sooner rather than later.
Because it just feels like Volpe is not making
right? the next. So if it's me, I want to get a 1 week, 2 week look at him up in the majors as we hit, you know, early August to know if I have a problem or not. Maybe it sparks Volpe. Maybe that sparks Volpe a little bit.
It might be. I mean, it just seems like he has been boneheaded in the field and not doing anything at the plate, and it's time to kind of move on from him. Maybe not move on completely, but, you know, time to say that, you know, you're not the heir apparent. You have to earn the position.
I can understand that.
Heel seems close, which is kind of cool for the Yanks. They need him back in the worst way.
They do.
Six innings last time out. So that's kind of a big deal. You know, listen, it's going to be if they can keep the rest of the rotation healthy, because if they can't, it doesn't matter. If they can't keep the rotation going, they're in trouble. But the fact is that they have the lineup that should be able to do it if they just play the consistent lineup every day and get the stars out there and enough of the crap of subbing guys in and subbing guys out, enough of Cashman's involvement and Boone's idiocy. It's time to sit there and let your stars play, let your best players play every day. If you feel like Volpe is not your guy, then let's see what Lombard's got. And I think that's what the Yankees have to do right now.
Yeah. Listen, I'm not against it. What you don't want is Lombard to come up here, not be good, and in the process, you completely destroy Volpe to the point where he's less valuable than he even is at this moment. That would be my only problem with this at this point. You know what I mean?
So asking you the question then, do you want to make the move or no? Because we're not going to know.
So
if he's going to be not hitting at all until he comes up.
So I would like to see him up here. My thought is I don't think he winds up coming up here this year.
Okay.
I think at the end of the day, Cashman says Lombard needs to be in spring training next year and get a spring training look before we decide to bring him up to the majors at this point. That would be either that or he's a September call up and he gets into four games, five games, and you see it then. But, you know, when the rosters expand to 846 players per team.
Yeah, so, they only go two guys.
They don't go as much as they used to.
I know. All right. Anything else, guys?
A couple quick things. Is Cal Raleigh for real? Is he going to be able to hold off Judge? Is he going to win the American League home run title?
No,
I don't. I don't think
he's
so.
A catcher, he shouldn't. If he does,
38 at the break, and he was caught on a hot mic saying that Judge only hits useless home runs. Judge is a great home run hitter when it's 7-0 already, or something like that.
The one thing I agree with you that because he's a catcher, but the one thing that he probably does have in his favor is that a lot of his off days in the second half, he may be DHing because he's got such a hot bat right now.
Yep.
You know, you got 38 homers going to the All-Star break. Yeah. You're going to DH him when you're giving him an off day now. So
career high at the All-Star break.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we look, Fried has the blister, not sure about the timetable, another blow to the Yankees. So what do you guys think about O'Neill Cruz? I mean, we saw some magic in the home run derby.
Ball explodes off his bat. My goodness.
I gave you the stat a couple weeks ago. 6 hardest hit balls, 3 by Cruz, 3 by Stanton.
When he hits it, boy, it goes.
Is Pittsburgh doing a disservice to him and guys like Skeens by not trying to put a competitive team around him? Is O'Neill Cruz going to become like an uncoachable guy? You see him lollygagging out there in center, missing balls and not running after him. You've seen him lollygagging around the infield. You've seen him lollygagging around the outfield. But we've
got a bunch of lollygaggers.
Lollygaggers. We used that line a couple last week or the week before. I don't remember. But I mean, O'Neill Cruz is like a superior talent right now, who's hitting like 250, and second in the league in stolen bases with 29. But is Pittsburgh's poor ownership going to have this guy either dealt or have this guy just stop really caring? Do you see any of that with him?
He'll be dealt, I think, more likely.
G, thoughts?
I don't know. I mean, you would hope Pittsburgh tries to get better, but based on what we've seen, the more likely scenario is these guys are going to get a little bit more experience in the majors and they'll be dealt for younger players. So,
do you think Skeens gets dealt as well?
At some point, yeah.
You think it's by the end of next year, or do you think it's like 3 years down the pike?
Yeah, I think it's probably at least 2 or 3 years down the pike. I don't think they're ready to get rid of him.
Because you can see him already kind of frustrated with the fact that they don't score runs.
Well, you look at the 2 starters tonight in the All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
Last 14 starts for Skubal.
Mm-hmm.
2.04 ERA, 8-1. Skeens, 1.83 ERA, 1-6.
Yeah, they don't score runs for the guy. No. I mean, you remember as a Met fan with, you know, Harvey having starts and DeGrom having starts and different Mets. That you know, DeGrom winning the Cy Young with less than 10 wins and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
This is kind of like that. At least the Mets won games. These guys aren't even winning games. It's not fun when you lose every night and you're pitching your heart out. I don't know. Pittsburgh's got to do something, in my opinion. I just think they have to do something a little bit more drastic, and they have to try to find a way to make their star players want to stay in Pittsburgh. The stadium apparently is gorgeous. I've never seen it, but no one's ever said a bad word about it. The fan base looks like it'll show up if they're doing well.
Yeah.
They're just not doing well. Anybody else have I have one last baseball point before anything else, and it's one of those stats I hate almost as much as WAR, but OPS plus. Okay. The Chicago Cubs currently have 4 guys with an OPS plus of at least 145. That's Bush, Tucker, Suzuki, and Crow Armstrong. No team in history, minimum 500 at-bats per player, has had 4 players with an OPS of 145 plus. For those that don't understand OPS plus, all right, it's taking OPS a step further by counting the stadiums and stuff like that to figure out how it all fits in. I hate this crap. I hate it with a passion. But the stat was so impressive, I had to go with it. Almost as impressive as I was, but minus 80, even though Gino found it completely unimpressive. So that stat didn't impress anybody. But this stat might impress somebody. I didn't know that no team has ever had 4 guys at a 145 plus OPS, 145 plus OPS plus. It's just kind of a a weird stat, but that's how good the Cubs have been.
What I mean, for those who don't know, 145 means that you are taking into account ballpark and where you play and everything else.
And the league average is 100.
45% better than the average player.
Yep.
And you got four guys who are 45% better than the average player.
Out of your everyday eight,
yeah,
you have four. You know,
how are they only one game up?
Is
nine with the DH.
The league in ribbies. And, you know, a guy like, Suzuki's not even mentioned in that. He's leading the league in RBIs. He didn't make the All-Star game. Now, Pete Alonso hits a home run, so Kev's having the time of his life right now.
Because it's the polar bear all over again.
He hit Boobage. So that was my last stat. You guys have anything else before we wrap up?
Yeah. Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge, 24 intentional walks this year. If he gets to 32, that puts him into a top 20 of any single season. That would knock Bonds out of the top 20 in a single season. But Bonds still has the 16th, 13th, 9th, 7th, 6th, 3rd, 2nd, and 1st most intentional walks of the season.
Oh, my God.
And just to go with Judge just for a second, he leads the league in hitting by like 20 points, right? He's second in home runs. He's second in RBIs by one. He leads the league in hits by double digits. He's second in runs to Shohei. He's what was the other stat? He's where am I missing it? Oh yeah, he was was in the top with overall OPS, top with slugging, top with on-base percentage, and the only other guy with an OPS over 1,000, he's at 1,195, is Raleigh with 1,010. So the year he's having is amazing, and Cal Raleigh right now leads him by three homers and a ribby. So we'll see what happens down the stretch. But Judge, despite cooling off, has been outstanding.
Yeah.
G, anything else?
I'm good.
Oh,
Mitch,
sorry.
Mitch Voit, 38th overall to the Mets, technically the first round because they added in some competitive balance picks. The University of Michigan.
Of course.
NHL, Will Horcroft, 24th to the Pittsburgh Penguins. NBA, Danny Wolfe, 27th to the Nets. And in the NFL, Mason Graham, Loveland, and Grant, all in the top 13. They are the first school to have number one or first round picks in all four major sports ever in a single season.
That's very impressive.
That's interesting. Wow.
And for Darren here, and maybe we brought this one up before. Smoltz, Glavin, Maddox, and Pedro struck out over 12,000 hitters combined. They faced Tony Gwynn 330 times, struck him out three.
You saw my three fingers go up right away? Yeah. I have seen this. But I stopped doing the Tony Gwynn stats because Gino gets mad.
I have bring it up for you, Darren.
But Gino gets mad. I don't like
that. I don't get mad.
I saw that one. It was like, that's right.
And then he comes back with a Ricky stat the week later just to make sure that I know.
That's the only stats I ever have in my head. That and Joe D stats are the only stats really in my head.
I don't admit.
And a very disappointing end. Club World Cup, Chelsea 3-0. It was 3-0 in the first half and game over.
And Trump celebrated with them, and the players found it odd.
Trump gave him the trophy. Trump didn't want to leave.
Yeah, they were expecting him to go, and he didn't. It wasn't like it was an American club team. It was the British club team, so I didn't understand it either. But there we are.
What was weird was when Trump was trying to be up Denton. You know, that was a little weird there, but that's another story.
And the whole thing ends up being a little weird all around, but we'll take it from there.
But anyway, to you, Darren.
All right. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. Darren here with Kevin here and Gino. Talking about the wild world of sports, a wild world where we spent 20 minutes on Connor Bedard for no freaking reason whatsoever, just because I thought I had a random stat and it pissed Gino off. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple product, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. Like Gino said in the beginning, follow the show, like it. Even if you don't like it, say you like it. Like it anyway. Share it. Let's get more listeners. Let's get more followers. That's what we want. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs. Plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.